All right. I'll call this meeting of the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics to order on today, July 17 at 11:37 a.m. Welcome to the committee members and guests. Jackie, the recording is on. Then let's have Jerry take roll.
Senator Coghill?
Here.
Senator Dennis Egan?
Here.
Representative Colleen Sullivan Leonard?
Here.
Representative Chris Tuck is not present, but is expected to join us shortly. Deborah Fancher?
Here.
Lee Holmes?
Here.
Joyce Anderson?
Here.
Connor Thomas?
Here.
Skip Cook?
Here.
We have a quorum to conduct business.
Mr. Chairman? Could I request that the volume be increased for those that are online, if we could, please? If we're able to up the volume. Okay, thank you very much.
Is anybody besides the senators online for this meeting? Were we going to have Ledge Council online?
Do we have Dan Wayne from Legislative Legal on with us?
Yes, I am here and online. Dan Wayne.
Thank you.
Remind the committee members and guests to identify themselves each time they speak so that the ones online will be able to know who's speaking and it will be recorded. First item of business is approval of the agenda. If there are any changes, I'll take them. If not, if somebody to approve the agenda. Been moved. Any objection? All right. We have minutes to be approved. Full committee minutes of May 17, 2018. If there are no corrections, I would entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Any objection? Hearing none, they're approved. And then there's the House Subcommittee. That was full committee on first one. This one is the minutes of the House Committee on May 17. I would entertain a motion to approve those or suggested amendments.
So moved.
It's been moved. Any objection? Hearing none, those are approved. We move to public comment. Is there anybody that wishes to speak to the committee? If you step forward and identify yourselves.
Hello, I'm Josh Breifogel. I'm a constituent of David Eastman. I would like to talk about some concerns I have about the previous proceedings, if that's okay. And I made some notes here before I came in this morning. So I watched on 360north.org, I watched the January 31st where Representative Tuck put forth this committee's recommendation regarding Representative Eastman being removed from the Ethics Committee. So when Representative Eastman tried to explain on the House floor that he had had no opportunity, no access, and no possible way of knowing about any accusation against any other member of the legislature, Representative Tuck interrupted him, citing an Ethics Committee rule that there should not be discussion of the details of the case. Now, this seemed to me to imply that he was saying that Eastman was reporting details in a public forum that should be kept confidential. But that seems strange since my representative was literally stating that he didn't know any details. And that caused me concern. If this is indicative of the nature and scope of the accusations of impropriety on Eastman's part, it only adds to my questions and concerns. Since Representative Eastman's immediate defense is that it would have been impossible for him to have known any confidential information, and Representative Tuck, serving as his accuser, seemed flustered by the implications and attempted to silence Representative Eastman on the House floor, I would like for this committee to answer to that scenario and attempt to make sense out of it for those of us here today. Later, continue. My second point is I went to the website for the Ethics Committee, and this stuck out to me. It says, the mandate for the existence of this committee is a fair and open government requires that legislators and legislative employees conduct the public's business in a manner that preserves the integrity of the legislative process and avoids conflicts of interest or even appearances of conflicts of interest. So I'm sitting here today watching a committee that has already determined my representative's guilt, getting a second chance to redetermine or undermine their previous determination. So that's the essence of a conflict of interest. It's almost Orwellian. So my concern is that if you reconfirm your previous finding, you undermine the credibility of this committee. So, and if you find him innocent, you also undermine the credibility of this committee. So either way, the ethics committee's credibility has been undermined, and there's a definite appearance of a conflict of interest for the whole. So there's no good solution for this committee today that doesn't undermine this committee. So that's, for me, as a citizen, as a constituent of David Eastman, it's very concerning for me, because now I have doubts about this committee either way. The amount of time it's taken for Representative Eastman and myself as his constituent to get this hearing and see evidence is also very unsettling. I feel shortchanged. And any damage that has been done has already been done as far as the public is concerned. The authorized media, as the jurist described them earlier, has already reported this case in such a fashion to lead the general public to believe that the deal is done. It's been decided that there was a fair process, and just now we're getting to that fair process. So we all have a right to the First Amendment, not just the authorized media. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, and I appreciate Representative Tuck making a point of that. And that it was impractical to try to stop people from recording and documenting this. But not only has this diminished Representative Eastman's voice, but it's also diminished the voices of his constituents. So it's very important to me that we see some sort of resolution here today, but I can't say enough how disappointed I am that there is no good answer, there is no solution that you're going to reach today that doesn't leave me questioning the Ethics Committee as a whole.
I would simply say to you that as far as the process that we follow the process that the legislature put into law.
Sure.
We don't make the rules here. The legislature has made the rules, and we're simply following them. So I would suggest that you have your representatives push for change in the legislature if you're not happy with it.
Absolutely, and I will do that. But it's important, again, to restate that Representative Eastman's reputation has been diminished, and so has, and with that, his capacity to create change in the legislature. So this is a snake eating its tail here. It's very difficult, and the system is breaking down. We're witnessing a breakdown in the system, and I hope for wisdom on all of your parts, because obviously we found a crack, a flaw in the system here. Things are not working as they should. And support for your committee as an ethics committee of all committees should be at the highest standard. So we as the public should definitely not be looking at this and seeing a no escape scenario where we lose confidence in this committee. And if that's a legislative thing or an administrative thing, it's neither here nor there. But the damage is done, not just to Representative Eastman, but to this committee.
So. Appreciate your comments.
And then, Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to the floor session. So when, and I didn't mean to interrupt Representative Eastman when he was speaking, except for I wasn't flustered, I was panicked, because he can speak about his case, but I was worried that it was going to lead into speaking of the other case, which is now public, and Mr. Fitzgerald had mentioned about the Gabriel Adu. I didn't want it to go into that. So I wasn't flustered as much as I was panicked that we're going to open ourselves up to exposing another ethics complaint against one of our members by walking in that direction.
Well, it's my understanding at that point Representative Eastman still didn't even know what he was being accused of.
But we didn't want to also reveal to the public that there was another case going on which led to this case. So that's what I was panicked about. I didn't want it to go to that direction, and so I was trying to maintain the integrity of the committee and the integrity of the legislature by making sure it didn't go that direction.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Excuse me. What's your last name again?
Fryfogle, Fryfogle.
Fryfogle. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll move to chair staff report, Jerry.
The,
oops. Oh.
Next item that we have on the agenda is the. Amendment of the contract.
For some reason you didn't put a number five on my marked up agenda. It's probably on the other one, so I'm going from four to six. Okay, so let's go to the amendment of contracts. I'm sorry.
In your packets, there are two contracts previously approved by the ethics committee for Mr. Fitzgerald and. And both of those in the amount of $10,000 each. The proposed amendment would be for each of these to be amended to $20,000 for each contract, and that would include expenses covering fiscal year 18 in excess of the $10,000. So I'm asking that the committee consider amendment of both of these contracts to that amount.
Do we need to do them one at a time?
Yes, we should probably do them one at a time. Let's take a look first at the Fitzgerald contract.
I would move to approve the amendment to the Fitzgerald contract, increasing the amount to total $20,000.
And making it clear that that is to include expenses incurred both in fiscal year 2018 and 2019. It's been moved. Is there any objection? Hearing none, that contract is amended. And we'll move to the Nolan contract. Propose that we amend it in the same way, just changing the amount from $10,000 to $20,000, with the understanding that that will pay expenses incurred in 2018 fiscal year and 2019 fiscal year.
So moved.
Any objection? Hearing none, that amendment is approved. Now we can go to the staff chair report, I think.
For my staff report, this is a continuation from our last meeting regarding ethics training. I have met with the Human Rights Commission and discussed training with them. Their suggestion for your consideration is that they offer to any returning legislator or returning legislative employee that they do a one-hour refresher course with a half hour for questions. So it would be at 1.5 hours, and that would follow our regular ethics training. And I have included in the packet just a mock-up of what it might be without that. So it could consist of 2 hours of training for staffers and for legislators with the different segments as we've traditionally done. In addition to that, it would be an hour and a half regarding the segments regarding sexual harassment and other forms of discrimination training. It would be just a refresher from the training that all legislators and legislative staffers took this year.
And that training, as I just recall, was 3 hours, wasn't it? The first time training is 3 hours.
And so it would be anticipated that new employees and new legislators would have the three-hour training, regular ethics training, and plus 3 hours of the sexual harassment, discrimination, and other forms of discrimination training.
So they're
6 hours.
So their refresher course would be 1 hour instead of 3 hours.
Well, an hour plus a half hour for
questions.
And they felt like that was the minimum time that it would take to give a meaningful presentation would be the half hour, or hour rather, presentation, but also a half hour for questions, because they felt like that was very important based on what the training was this year.
So, Mr. Chair, this 2015 on here,
The two items that I've included in the packet was to give you an idea of how many training sessions that we did, both in 15 and 17, and they have agreed to do the training for each one of those. In other words, that if we had a similar schedule, you know, which could be between 11 and 14 sessions, that they would be in person present doing their portion of it.
Immediately following.
Immediately following, which would help our record keeping. So we would have the same people attending, so we could, it would help our attendance and keeping track of the ethics training that everyone's completed successfully.
Discussion on that?
The only question is do they have to be, they have to be, I understand the question part, and that's probably very valuable, but 3 hours, is it, does it have to be face-to-face? It cannot be via a telephonic kind of thing or on a computer where you have recorded training?
Well, the intention is to actually record some of these sessions, because we always have people who don't make one of the training and that are hired later, and so they would be forced to do it by video, just like we have them do the regular ethics training by video currently. So the intent is to actually tape a couple of the early ones and have that available for any late stragglers.
Deb, Lee Holmes here. In response to that, when I sat in on the one down in Juneau, it was amazing to me how much interaction there is between the audience and presenter throughout the presentation. And I think that was one of the big benefits that I believe that would be missing if they were at a go-to meeting or so. I think the ability to just raise your hand and say, I don't understand, is an opportunity I think that we need to provide, that they should have present for them.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, you know, I do, being a business rep for the IBW for 17 years, we deal with sexual harassment. It's part of our apprenticeship training as well. Prevention, sexual harassment prevention. And I thought it was very useful being there in person, too, because there are scenarios, especially as a legislator, that's way different in the workplace and construction industry. It's way different than the healthcare industry. And they all have their own unique qualities, but we do too. And so it was very helpful not only to have my scenarios and my questions answered, but to hear other people's scenarios and questions to be answered. And when it comes to the new member orientation, that's usually a week long for legislators and staffers before session begins. And we used to have that as part of the training. In 2017, if I remember correctly, Edge Affairs, because they were crunched on time, took sexual orientation, not orientation, sexual harassment, part of their orientation. And so I think that's the reason why we got into some of the problems. I think it is very helpful and very effective for people to be aware of what's right, what's wrong. So I don't think it'd be a problem. I do have a little bit of concern. I know that some new incoming legislators have a hard time making it for that first week. I know that we've had it broadcasted, and we allowed when we had the ethics committee training last time, that we did allow someone to listen in and didn't make it to that one. But I would rather make that a very rare exception. Also.
And, Mr. Chair, that has happened in the past as well, that you know there might have been one or two legislators that were unable to make it. And weren't even able to call in. So I, as administrator back then, would do a one-on-one. So I think I had maybe three one time come in and sit, and we did just a class with three legislators. And so
just to recap why we're in this position is that it was determined that the training that had been done by the Commission on Human Rights was actually under our jurisdiction as far as legislators and legislative staff were concerned. So, but we're relying back on them to do the presentation of it, as they have in the past for all. I guess we would entertain a motion to go ahead and accept their recommendation that it be done for returning staff and legislators on a, that 1.5 hour basis.
Make a motion. I'll move that.
Any discussion on that?
So, Mr. Chair, I have a question. Is that making it mandatory then, just like the ethics training?
Yes.
It is. Okay.
Any objection? Hearing none, Jerry can report back to them that we'll expect them to be at all of our training sessions to present the conclusion.
Just one final comment. They were very anxious or very willing to do all of these sessions when I told them that we had that many sessions that we did. They were going to make those arrangements be at each one of them. So their willingness to do that, of course, makes it much easier.
Good. All right. Anything else from you, Jerry, at this point?
No, I think we're ready to move into our executive session portion.
All right. I would entertain a motion to move to the executive session.
So moved.
Any objections? Hearing none, let's go off. All right. We're back out of the executive session into the full committees.
Did you hear me? Yes. Hello. Yeah, John, I hear you fine.
With our roll call vote, and we'll see if we can get the senators to make sure they're on. Representative Colleen Sullivan Leonard.
Yes.
Representative Chris Tuck.
Yes.
Member Skip Cook.
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas.
Yes.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Yes.
Member Deb Bancher.
Yes.
Member Lee Holmes.
Yes.
Our two senators who are telephonic were... I mean, if we just lost them?
Yeah. Can you hear us now?
We hear you fine. Jerry, this is Senator Egan. We hear you fine.
They must have us on mute.
Yeah, I think so. Hello.
Senator John Coghill, we're voting on advisory opinion 1803 as amended.
Yes. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I think you're right. They have
Senator
us on
Dennis
mute.
Egan.
Yes.
Are you online with us?
Yes, I am, and yes. That's useless.
Senators, this is Dan Wayne. Can you hear me?
Senator Coghill?
Yes, absolutely, Dan.
Try pressing your volume up button, and sometimes that makes the mute go off.
I've got it wide open.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. They'll just have to figure it out. I don't think they can hear me either.
No.
I can hear you in the recording.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck. You, they can?
No, we can. The recording can. I don't know if they can.
Shoot. Yeah, I just heard from our staff that they can hear Senator Coghill and myself on the video.
I'll try calling Jerry's cell phone.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah.
Senator Coghill, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Jerry, the senators and I are both can't be heard by you, but we can hear you. So,
trying to troubleshoot that.
Okay.
I'm going
just
to let
to
the chair know
yeah.
That.
There he is.
At this point in time,
he just got your call.
Hear us.
Dan, he just got your call.
Great.
Neither vote. This constituents love that.
Are you on the phone with him?
Yes.
With the mod speaker?
There you go.
Hold the speaker by the mic.
I'm calling from two different places.
If you get one up, they get their votes one at a time.
Yeah. This is Jerry Anderson with Legislative Ethics. Who am I speaking with?
Jerry, this is Dan Wayne.
Okay. Were you able to hear us, Dan?
We can hear you.
Are the senators there?
Do you have any of the senators with you?
No, but they're on the phone, and they can hear me.
I can hear you. I can hear you, Dan. Just tell Jerry yes from Egan.
Okay. Senator John Coghill, we are voting on AO 1803 as amended. How do you wish to vote on that, to concur or not concur?
Concur.
To concur, a vote of yes, to concur?
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Egan.
Yes, I concur.
Thank you, Senator Egan.
keep him on there. Let's go to 1804.
All right.
All right,
please hold on.
We have before us now 1804, which we have discussed and are ready to act on. Would you summarize 1804, Jerry? And
formal advisory opinion 1804 advises that the Legislative Ethics Act does not prohibit a legislator from reserving or submitting a legislative citation that names a person who is not a constituent of that legislator, subject to AS 2460-030 limitations.
All right. We're ready to call a roll on that. You go ahead.
Senator John Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Dennis Egan.
Yes.
Representative Colleen Sullivan Leonard.
Yes.
Representative Chris Tuck.
Yes.
Member Skip Cook.
Yes.
Member Connor Thomas.
Yes.
Member Joyce Anderson.
Yes.
Member Deb Bancher.
Yes.
Member Lee Holmes.
Yes.
With that, we have a vote of 9-0 on each of those advisor opinions.
And, Mr. Chairman, as amended, is that correct?
Yes.
As discussed in the amendment.
All right, both those are approved as amended. And that concludes the business of the full committee. I would entertain a motion to adjourn. I move that we adjourn the full committee session. Hearing no objection, we are adjourned.